No! Well, 10 beers.
My advice to you, start drinking heavily. I'm getting another beer. You want one?
Now, whose ass I got to kick to get myself a beer?
All right, welcome to another exciting installment of Big Foamy Head, Great Divide Brewery, and this is now a brewery in Rick's new backyard, right down the street from him, somewhere.
And seeing as we're paying him so much money, he can probably go get us an interview. And
that's right. It's all lined up.
Yep.
They've got you scheduled to go out there in a couple of weeks, meet with Brian Dunn, who is the...
I probably already talked to the brewery reps a couple of times since I've been here.
Yeah, so you probably have.
I need to go to the brewery itself.
Yeah. So Great Divide, big brewer on the Denver scene. They're fairly new, I guess, in terms of microbrews. From 1994 was when they started. And Brian Dunn, home brewer, got some money together and bought a building and went to work and... some lean times over the first year or so, but they started winning medals right off the bat. And we're going to get right into their beers. This first beer that Mike and I are enjoying is a Denver Pale Ale, which is, I think we're doing opposite ends of the scale. It's one of their, I don't know if lighter is a good word, but let's say gentler beers. And you're all the way at the other end with a mean old barley wine.
The old ruffian.
So while we're doing ascending alcohols, you're doing descending. We're working the shallow end of the pool, and you're cannonballing into the deep end. So very adventurous of you.
Well, I'm sitting here with five bombers on ice, so by myself, yeah. I'm not too sure.
Yeah.
Then I'm going to be able to keep up with
you guys. You're going to be toasted. Okay. Well, the Denver Pale Ale, what we are getting into, this is our kickoff beer, and this is one of the ones we're talking about styles, and we're going to be getting into styles, rating beers, et cetera, later on. But this is one that low alcohol, 5.4. You could buy it here in Memphis if it ever made it here. At the grocery store. And it is, over and over, and it's meddled in this, the style is an English pale ale. And around here, we've learned English means milder, let's say, lighter, American, aggressive, right? So I knew going into this Denver pale ale, I kind of had preconceived ideas because of the style of beer. And I'm not disappointed. It is it's a nice drinking. Well, yours is gone.
Yeah, it's history.
Okay.
I thought it would be a little hoppier.
Yep.
But it still had a pretty good hoppy flavor, but it wasn't what I thought it was going to be, being a pale ale.
And it's got good balance, nice malt, nice hops, nothing overly aggressive, and you could drink a bunch of them.
Yeah, it went down real quick.
And it does have a hop finish to it, and the color on it is it's pretty light. It's like a light gold color. The head dissipates pretty quickly, and I think this beer probably could be a little warmer, actually. And we've taken them out of the refrigerator, and so now you cracked your old ruffian?
Yeah, I could read from the bottle if you guys want.
Well, I got a little of the stats, too. So this one that we're doing, and what we're going to do something a little different this time. We've got all the data. Ray Beer scored this one a 66, which doesn't sound good, but you got to listen to the rest of the numbers. That's a 3.26 out of 5 based on an average of 400 reviews. Beer Advocate scored it an 83, quite a bit difference, 3.67 out of 200 reviews.
But that's 3.67 out of a 5 best possible rating.
Yes, same thing. Yeah. So there's Rate Beer 3.26, Beer Advocate 3.67. So a few points makes 20 points, almost 20 points worth of difference in a score. Remember that. Write that down. You will be tested later. So Old Ruffian, Rick, is what you're relaxing with, and it weighs in at a light 10.2% alcohol.
And 98 on Rate Beer, and then 92 on Beer Advocate.
Yep. And how is it?
Well, it's wonderful. It's a kind of a dark copper color. It's got no head at all. It's a very smooth barley one. Actually, it's one of the better barley ones I've had in a while.
And that's saying something, because barley wines are usually kind of like a dumping ground for fierce, mean beers that are.
They're usually as big as they get.
Yeah, they're all big. You don't have a light barley wine.
Yeah, they're right. Beers that went awry while they were brewing, I guess, and they just dump them into the barley wine category.
Yeah.
It says Old Ruffian is a hefty, hop-forward barley wine style ale, seemingly mellow at the start with subtle fruit aromas and complex caramel sweetness, quickly becomes aggressive with its bold hop flavors and huge hop bitterness. Ultimately, the big body, succulent sweetness, and massive hop character come together to work wonders on your palate.
Do you
agree with that?
You do. Okay. Well, our marketing speak said the DP is known for its smooth, malty middle. I agree with that. Complemented with hearty and complex hop flavor. I got hops, but the ending, I've got it says the DPA's extraordinary hop finish is marked by crisp yet moderate hop bitterness. I've got just lingering bitterness. And I'm not saying it in a bad way, but I'm not necessarily saying it in a good way. It's kind of like I wish it would go away right now. It's like sticking to me. But this is what I also found out. I was reading on some of these reviews where somebody really gave it a poor rating, and then they checked on there, and apparently the beer they had was 4 years old.
Oh, wow.
They liked it to a point.
So, how old is this one? Do we have a born-on date?
I don't know, though. You don't really find those. But I'm pretty sure this is new enough. I don't think it's 4 years old. There was no dust on it when I bought it. But
if it's an English pale ale, it's probably got Fruggles hops, which are kind of musty tasting.
Yes, exactly.
So they're not overpowering. They're not citrusy.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that was, as I read the reviews and looked at this, that was one of the things that kept popping into my head, because if you look at Great Divide's brews that they do, they got a flagship line. Denver Pale Ale is one of them. And then they got this whole portfolio of really aggressive big beers. And it says that Brian was brewing all these things, winning some medals, doing good. And then later, it doesn't have the date on here, but it's like several years later, he said, well, you know, I want to make a big beer. And so he started coming up with these big beers and bigger beers and bigger beers. And we've got some more coming up in a little bit.
You talked about hardware a while ago. Look at all the hardware they won on that DPA. All the way back to 97, bronze and gold and best pale ale, Westward Magazine, best of Denver 1998, regional champion, United States Beer Testing Championship.
Up to 2004.
Yeah.
So it's well received, and this might be one that it's in the style category, right? Yeah, and this is where we were talking. We're going to talk more about okay, how do you judge a beer? Now, judge is a subjective word, where it could be, when you say judge a beer, you're following very strict criteria, BJCP, which we've referenced off and on throughout the years. We talk about, well, these people say this and those people say that. And so I started looking into it. And I started looking into a lot and discovered some interesting things about judging. Well, around here, we say we like it, we don't like it. That's our simplest form of judging. And then we get into some of the descriptors like we just did. We look at color, we look at head, we look at taste and things like that. Well, there's a lot of ways to judge a beer. And, of course, we just cited Rate Beer. We cited Beer Advocate. And those are two recognized sources of information. And I got curious thinking about this, and I guess before we go any further, we should point out this is a special day in Big Foamy Head history.
Yeah, I was waiting for you to bring that up.
There it is. We're 2 years old.
Hey, happy birthday,
right.
Big Foamy Head.
July 5th was the first show.
Yeah, so we are we are 2 years old today.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, happy birthday to us. Let's let's have a beer.
Let's have a beer.
Finally. I was trying to count the beers. I know we're right at 500. We're up there.
Are we really?
We are way up there. I've continued to add. You added them. I added them. And we're on up there. You know, we're taking our time. We're getting there. But I'm looking at this and I'm thinking all these beers, and you know, I'd look at it and I go, oh yeah, I remember that one. And then now we've got our bottle caps glued on the wall, and so we've got all these like reminiscences of beer. But what we don't have, and we don't really do, is like, not so much, I'm not talking about doing the homework, but really looking at it and say, well, here's why do we like it, and kind of trying to quantify it a little bit. So I got to looking at it. Here's what I've learned. There are, in the world of judging beer, no matter where you go, five criteria. And those are aroma, appearance, taste, mouthfeel, and overall. Those are the five categories. No matter where you go, Rate Beer, Beer Advocate, BJCP, anybody, those five things are always present. They might use a slightly different word like palate instead of mouthfeel, but that's what it means. Where the differences come in is how they weigh each of these. So if you were a florist, if something smelled really good, aroma would be important to you. If it looked like dried weeds, but still smelled really good, that might not be so good a bouquet of flowers, right?
Right.
But a beer is something liquid in a glass, so appearance then probably isn't that important to you if you know anything. But I guess, and Beth is sitting in here, Mike's wife, when you see a dark beer, what do you think?
I think strong.
Strong, okay, which is typical, okay. So, and the reality is, it isn't always the case. You don't always get a strong beer when it's dark, right? But it just looks that way, right? It looks mean and intimidating. And so Rick was just drinking the Old Ruffian, which I expected, Rick, you to say, it's a very dark, almost black in color. I just had this preconceived visual of what it was going to look like, but it wasn't.
Oh, right? No, it's more of a golden copper color.
Yeah, and so that's one of those things that if you were to hold up a glass of Guinness and a glass of Old Ruffian and ask somebody, which one looks like a stronger beer, knowing that Guinness is just a little skipping around the park kind of beer,
right?
Whereas Old Ruffian will steal your money. Right? Knock
and
you down.
And make you like it.
That's right. And, you know, it's one of those things. So it's subjective. So I got to think about this, and I'm looking at thought, okay, this is pretty simple. So we just drank Denver Pale Ale. Rick, you just drank Old Ruffian. If you were to say aroma, Mike, you smelled the beer, anything?
You want to put it on a scale of 1 to 5?
Well, no, just what was just opinion. It just did it.
I thought it was a real pleasant hoppy aroma.
Okay, and I got virtually no hoppy aroma. Not
really?
A lot, very light to me. Okay, and see, this is where we got subjective.
Yeah, it wasn't strong. It was just pleasant.
Okay. Yeah. All right, appearance. It was a light gold. It
light
was
gold.
Actually, you know, it wasn't quite Budweiser yellow, but it was getting a lighter color. Which my sense on looking at it was, oh, it's going to be weak.
Weak.
Yeah. Okay.
But it had a pretty good mouthfeel.
And mouthfeel, yeah, drank fine. It didn't feel like motor oil or grit.
And it wasn't
or,
real effervescent or carbonated or anything like that. It wasn't fizzing in your mouth.
The taste of it, that's where you got a lot of variances in opinion, depending on whether it's a hoppy or whether it was malty. And then the last thing was overall. And that's where, as it turns out, the most points live. And overall is basically, what'd you think?
Yeah.
That's it. So I'll give you an example. There's this beer, and Rick, you've probably seen this. And it's called Mississippi Mud Black and Tan Beer. Now, you would know it because it's served in what looks like a little moonshine jug.
Yeah.
You seen that?
Mm-hmm,
I've
sure
seen
have.
It. I've never had it. I thought, oh, God, that's some
novelty. But you
novelty.
Know what? I
think
it's I only saw it on the internet. I haven't seen it in a store or restaurant or anything, just on
I
the internet.
I saw it in Florida. But I've seen this thing. I thought, well, that's a novelty beer. I'm not going to buy it. Mm-hmm. I was turned off because it looked like a little jug.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, I saw that on Rate Beer today. And what do you know? It was rated poorly in everything except overall. And if you look on Rate Beer, and here's the curious thing. Rate Beer, you know that number that we cite? That on Old Ruffian, it says 98? 98 is the percentile only of the overall. It has nothing to do with taste.
Really?
It's just overall impression. So that's why if you look at Mississippi Mud on taste, aroma, palate, it's low. The average rating, the 3-point whatever, et cetera, low. But it ranked a little higher because of overall. It weighs heavy. So this is where you got to learn to read between the lines. If you look on Rate Beer, it says 90, in the little word underneath the number, it says overall. So that kind of threw me. It's like, okay, well, Old Ruffian, looking at what Rick's drinking, 3.92 out of 550. Well, the number is almost irrelevant of how many people reviewed it. Once it gets
over, 3.92 is an average.
Well, you would assume with bigger numbers that you're going to be more accurate, you know?
Well, yeah, I think you would.
But throughout the highs and lows, they'd cancel each other out.
Right. And Rate Beer, as it turns out, uses a Bayesian algorithm with standard deviation. This is statistics class. They do throw out the outliers, although they use kind of a floating standard deviation, which is kind of odd. But 3.92, let's just say that, 3.92 out of 5. All right? Do the math for me, Mike. If it was 4 out of 5, what would that be? It would be 80%.
Yeah, 80%.
But yet, on Rate Beer, it's a 98. How the hell do you get 98?
Well, because
when it's 3.92 out of 5.
Because it's on the overall.
Correct.
Yeah.
It's not the total score. Now we're getting somewhere. Whereas, how about 4.35 out of 5? That's actually closer to 92%.
Yeah, you're in that low 90s.
Beer Advocate, here's how they do it. They take each of the five categories, and each one gets a percentage. Each one of these, you can only vote 1 through 5. You can vote like 1/2 if you want to. So 1 through 5, and then they say, okay, aroma isn't as important as taste. And I'll pull it up later when you look. But you see where I'm going with this is they use same categories, slightly different. And then Rick Sellers from Pacific Brew News called to give me the BJCP. They also do the five categories, but you have an aroma. There's weighting of 12 up to 12 points, 1 to 12 to aroma. Appearance is simply 1 to 3. And taste is 1 to 20, quite a bit of points in taste. Mouthfeel, 1 to 5. So in this, appearance is less than how was the mouthfeel.
Mm-hmm.
Overall gets 13. These all total up to 50 points, right?
Mm-hmm.
So your total in a judging is 50 points. So if you have a great-looking beer but not so hot a taste, you're screwed. Doesn't matter how pretty it is.
And it can look like shit, but if it tastes good and it's overall, you got
there
a winner.
There you go. You got a winner. So this is where it opinions vary, right? And, you know, I thought, okay, well, that's real good, and everybody's got opinions, and we all like what we like. You thought I was going to say
that statement.
Yeah.
Everyone has an opinion.
That's right.
They're like what?
So, and I'm right there, okay, well, you know, and you got all
they
these.
They usually smell.
Yeah. So I saw this joke. I thought this was funny. It's kind of relevant to the conversation. A guy was seated next to a little girl on an airplane. Being bored, he turned to the little girl and said, "Let's talk. I've heard flights go quicker if you strike up a conversation with your fellow passenger." The little girl, who was reading a book, closes it slowly, looks over, says to the guy, "What would you like to talk about?" The guy says, "Oh, I don't know. How about nuclear power?" And the little girl says, "Okay, well, that could be interesting. But let me ask you a question first. A horse, a cow, and a deer all eat the same stuff, grass. But a deer poops out little pellets, while a cow pops out a big flat patty, and a horse produces clumps of dried grass. Why do you suppose that is?" guy thinks about it and says, well, I have no idea. To which the little girl replies, well, do you really feel qualified to discuss nuclear power when you don't know shit? So we all have our opinions.
Yes.
And we should realize that at the end of the day, none of us know shit.
That's pretty good.
We know what we like. So I thought this is, I was trying not to get to a math challenge here, but I go by the old rating system of do I like it, do I not like it, would I drink it again, you know? And
hey, Rick, I have a question for you. You know, when you make your beer, your home brews, and you're putting them in a judge or you're putting them in a contest, do you try to make that beer match the style, or do you kind of taste the beer and then insert it to a certain style category? What's your opinion on that?
I know that several people can enter the same beer into different categories, and they might win in a category that the beer wasn't even brewed for. I mean, mm-hmm. they might brew a... I don't have any good examples.
You know, well, like stouts and porters.
Yeah, they're very similar.
They could brew a porter and then enter it in as a stout and win as a stout and not win as a porter.
Mm-hmm.
So that happens frequently. A lot of people, they brew and then they decide what category they're, or style that their beer fits the best, or they kind of shotgun and they enter it in several different categories and hope to win.
Yeah, I got you.
Yeah, like a pale ale, an IPA, depending on where your beer sits,
mm-hmm.
could go different ways.
Yeah, that is a gray area, you know, whether it's a an Imperial IPA or an IPA, mm-hmm. or, you know, different styles like that. So.
Well, we got some more beers, and I'm going to let you work on that, and we're going to pop our next beer from Great Divide. And I got another interesting tune. I kind of got off on this weird sort of tangent. I had some beer music, and then I started looking for something to fill in, and then I just got off on this road. Well, I got one here. And this is from a guy from Memphis who's kind of a legend in the music scene, since we are a Memphis-based show. I picked this guy up, Alex Chilton. And we played Alex on the show before. When he was 16, he joined the Box Tops, recorded the hit The Letter. And then his voice changed, and believe it or not, it got higher instead of lower. He was with Big Star. You heard his parody of his song, September Girls, on the opening to the show, That 70s Show.
Oh, yeah.
That's not them singing. It's somebody else. But Alex has been around for a long time, produced a lot of good music. And so this is one from A Man Called Destruction. This was recorded about 4 years ago, and it's Don't Stop.
Yeah, when you start, it's like a bomb drops, tearing apart all of my props. Baby, don't stop. Walk through it, yeah, but don't stop. Keep it going. Oh, baby, keep on. Never been done. Baby, don't stop. Whatever you do, don't stop it.
Says Alex Chilton. Don't stop, and we're not stopping with our Great Divide. Actually, we got to take less time during these musical breaks because we are almost gone with the Titan IPA, which is our lightest entry in the Great Divide Big Beers. This is an IPA, and it is of an IPA style. I was looking for the paperwork I've got here on the Titan IPA. It says, traditionally, India Pale Ales, hoppiest of all pales, brewed with more alcohol, etc., about the journey to India. We all know about that. They say, instead, we brew Titan IPA for hop disciples, independent beer drinkers seeking out robust, flavorful beers. Titan IPA fills the bill, beginning with piney hop aromas and citrus hop flavors, finishing with rich, malty sweetness that's carefully balanced with crisp hop bitterness. And this goes good with these flaming hot chicken tenders that Mike brought over here.
They are flaming hot.
And food pairings, IPAs and hoppy beers work well with spicy foods. And this one, believe it or not, has an alcohol of 6.8%, way more than our last beer, the Denver Pale Ale, and not near as much as the Old Ruffian that Rick had. And Rick, you're drinking the Hades, so, which is a golden, Belgian-style strong golden, and that's a 7.3%.
Yeah, it says Hades is brewed with a rare Belgian yeast strain that gives complex spicy flavor and aroma, noticeable hops, and medium malt character, making an extremely well-balanced, crisp ale.
Mm-hmm. And beer, this is where, in my little soapbox earlier, Beer Advocate doesn't have a rating on this beer because it's less than 10 reviews. However, of those 10 reviews, it's got a 4.03 average, which, if you do your math, would be at least an 80-something. Mm-hmm. Ray Beer rated it 51, which is extremely low, and that has 13 ratings with an average of 3.13. And this is where, if you don't have many ratings, your numbers can fluctuate wildly or not at all. So, Rick, what do you think about it? This is a Belgian-style strong
gold. Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
All right. This is, you're saying it's only rated at 56?
51.
51, huh? That's wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so that's bad. And this is where, in coming up, we got an interview with Rick Sellers, and it's basically, you got to be the judge. At the end of the day, you have to be the judge of the beer. You know,
I will tell you, it's not much darker than a, let's say, a Michelob.
Yeah.
It's very pale. But it has the true Belgian aroma, nose, the flavors, the spiciness.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fantastic beer.
Are you seeing the lacing on the edges and all of that on the foam? Or
sure.
Okay. You're drinking out of a coffee cup.
Man, okay. Lacing all over the place.
You're just drinking it out of the bottle.
Lacing for days. Well,
is it lacing around the neck?
There it is. The Titan IPA, like I said, is a lower alcohol for a big beer, 6.8. Beer Advocate rated it a 90, 4.18 average out of 453. Rate Beer rated it 96, 3.82 average out of 672 reviews. And we keep throwing all these numbers out. High numbers are good as long as you got a lot of people rating it. And the overall, the 90s, the 96s, you know, it means a lot of people liked it. That's the bottom line. So, to me, again, this is something, it's a good guide for you to use. And maybe if you're wanting to try something, you look it up. What do people think? Read the market speak on the brewer's site, because most brewers aren't going to put, this beer really sucks, don't buy it.
Yeah.
But the reviewers might.
What do you think, Rick? Would you buy it again?
80s?
Yeah.
Yes, I would. Yes, I would.
Had you had it before until tonight?
I had not.
Okay.
All right. Well, Claire, you haven't really had, since you've been coming over here, hoppy beers. And this is like one of your first hoppy beers.
That's right. That's right. And I'm in a hopping good mood now after trying that.
Good.
Yes.
So did you like that? What did you think?
I did. In fact, we're sitting here, like you said, we're eating some wonderful chicken breasts and some cheese. Mm-hmm. And this would be a wonderful, crisp beer to take on a picnic. mm-hmm. some French
would
bread.
Be a good one.
It would
mm-hmm.
be sitting in the nice tall yeah. grass and listening to the bees buzzing around.
Yeah,
bees and beers. Mm.
I guess it was on the news today that beer is the new wine. So you talk about packing a picnic basket, you could take along a craft beer.
Yeah, why not? Now, and you got your share here recently of some craft beers from the microest of all brewers, the home brewers, right?
Well, yeah, and the pro brewers. I was at the National Home Brewers Convention in Denver this year. Luckily, it's going to be in Cincinnati next year, so make your plans if you want to go to that. And there were two main events, well, three main events. There was the Pro Brewers Night the first night, and James Spencer just posted his video today. James Spencer was all over the place. He was interviewing everybody. I didn't go as a media representative. I just went as an attendee. So Basic Brewing Radio had very good coverage of this, and I ran into the guys at the Brewing Network. Those guys, are you familiar with them?
No, not Basic Brewing.
No, the Brewing Network. It's a group out of California. They do a Sunday show, and they've got a huge cult they have a huge following. They're very closely associated with morebeer.com, online beer store.
Yeah, I know. I'm confusing them with James, but go ahead.
So they actually have several shows, and they turned out to be the nicest guys in the world. I thought they'd be kind of high-end because they're fairly professional. I mean, the guy who does the show also does FM radio, and
they sound good, too, huh? Okay. Wow. They sound good, too, huh? As well as...
They're funny, you know. Anyway, they turned out to be very nice guys. So, if you haven't checked out the Brewing Network, one show I particularly recommend is the Jamil Show.
Yeah.
And he does a show per style in the BJCP, which kind of follows along to what we've been discussing all night. And so the three nights of this thing was Pro Brewers Night, the Home Brewers Night, or the Club Night, when all the different clubs in the country come together and they bring kegs and kegs and kegs. Kegs and kegs and kegs of beer. I think there were 600 kegs there that night.
Wow.
And then these are the 5-gallon kegs. And
yeah.
then the third night is the actual awards banquet itself. And that's when Jamil Zanishev he was up there at least 6 or 7 times when he
very
won
nice.
Silver. And,
well, the guy knows what he's doing. I mean,
yes, he does. So if you want to know how to brew two style and what judges are looking for, he is the most award-winning home brewer in the country, and he knows a thing or two about the BJCP, you know.
Yeah.
And one of the things that was very cool about that night was he won a bottle of Utopias, which is Sam Adams Extreme Beer.
Yeah, it's a 100-something buck beer, yeah.
Yeah. So he won it, and he's already had it, and he said, anybody that wants to try this, come by the hospitality room afterwards, and I'll pour some. So yours truly was like third in line.
All right. Oh, wow. So you got a little swallow there.
Yeah,
huh?
That was fantastic.
All right.
But he was with John Palmer, and they're promoting a new book. Lots of authors there, lots of brewing industry superheroes, you know.
Very nice.
So it was a very fun experience.
And it was...
did I mention there was a lot of beer?
You did say that.
You
I
said
think
there was just a couple of kegs there.
One or two kegs. But
couldn't turn around without having a beer.
Very
nice. So you
nice.
Really had to learn how to moderate yourself.
I bet.
Luckily, it was kind of a. It wasn't the most go-getter.
And did you learn how to moderate yourself?
You had to. You had to, or you wouldn't make it. I think that there were a lot of people who didn't make it past Pro Brewers Night.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, they spent everything they had and were hungover for the next 2 days.
Yeah.
But so you had to learn how to control yourself and sample and. You
well,
know, they had long breaks, so you could go back to your hotel room and sleep.
Yeah,
and
purge.
And stuff like that. No, I didn't do any purging. But
go to the vomitorium there and hand you the feather. Well, we've cracked open our next beer, which you're going to enjoy this.
And this is good.
This is the Hercules Double IPA.
Hercules, Hercules, Hercules.
And... And, yeah, you get yours open because this one, we both have the same thing. The marketing speak, hoppier, maltier, with more alcohol than a standard IPA. Hercules Double IPA, definitely not for the faint of heart. It is, however, an elixir fit for the gods, a brash but creamy wonder. Hercules pours a deep orange coppery color, forming substantial lace in the glass. Hercules Double IPA delivers a huge amount of piney, floral, and citrusy hop aroma and flavor from start to finish. A hefty backbone of nutty, toffee-like malt character balances Hercules' aggressive, punchy hop profile. Well, it's definitely an orangey coppery color. It's got the pudding sort of head, and it laces like crazy. I mean, you can slosh it, and the lace is like clinging and stuff. So it's a really thick pudding head. I like that. The smell on it.
Yeah, I've got 4 inches of head.
Yeah, the smell is just awesome. And then when you take that first taste, it just blows up in your mouth.
Yeah, it's a very
it's really,
hoppy.
Really good.
So just as a comparison notes, you know, we didn't talk really much about the IBUs and bitterness, the international bittering units. The Titan was 65. This is 85.
Oh, wow.
So that's a lot of hopness. But it finishes clean.
Finishes real well. Sure does. And, you know, you're just ready for that next sip. You know, it's not like you put it down and you taste it and taste it and taste it. You put it down and you're like, man, I want another sip.
While it's in your mouth, it's spanking your tongue with all of the different hops. And there is that piney. I guarantee you there's some Chinook in there, one of my personal favorites. And, man, and then it goes away, which is a good thing. You know, unlike the Denver earlier, which I couldn't get rid of. And not that it was that bad.
I didn't have that problem. It didn't bother me that bad.
Well, and you know, this one is like there all up in your face and it's gone. Mm-hmm. The alcohol on this is a delicate 9.1% alcohol.
Wow. Daddy-like.
Beer Advocate, 91, 4.26 out of 532. Rate Beer gives it a 99.
Wow.
That's a 4.07 out of 887 reviews. Now, this, again, is where we say, okay, well, the math doesn't work out. 4.07 out of 5, that's only 80. But the overall opinion, where it really counts,
99.
That's across the board, the average overall of 887 people. You got to respect that a little bit. Yeah, you know, some people may say, oh, it's an ugly-looking beer. Okay, whatever. Or it smells funny.
You know, look at the Titan IPA. It says Titan IPA weighs in at a considerable 65 international bittering units.
Which is.
Yeah, considerable. And then this one is a 85. Yeah,
right.
That's just, wow.
I mean, it's one of those things that, man, this is a tasty, this is what an IPA is. And this is a double IPA. Which I was really looking forward to that because that's a double IPA. They're trying to get that categorized as a San Diego style.
Oh, really?
California, they love the hell out of the hops. And this is common, double IPAs where they just go nuts with the hops, pack it in there.
You know, I'll tell you, when that hop flavor's going away, that's when that citrus comes in and really really wipes out that hop flavor.
A grapefruit kind of citrusy taste. Are you getting that, Claire? What are you making your notes there?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's hard for me to say anything because I just can't get this glass away from my mouth. You know, it's that good.
And this is a strong hop beer.
It is,
isn't it? It is strong.
It's very smooth.
Yeah,
as you drink it, but it does tend to tickle the back of the esophagus.
Yeah, it wrestles with your whatever that thing is,
back
the glottis.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, what you said.
Yeah, it's some high hop wars going on in your mouth. They're very tasty, but it finishes great. Mm. Okay, so if you're out on Claire's picnic, are you going to still hear bees buzzing or ears ringing after you drink this?
Yeah.
or something. The frog singing. is this a picnic beer or is this an indoor beer?
You'll probably see the birds.
Let me just have another swig.
The birds will be barking and the dogs will be singing after you drink a few of these.
And the cats flying around.
Yeah.
Now, this is good beer for sitting by the pool.
It is. Oh. It's very good.
We've gone to the pool now, have we?
9.1% alcohol, though. It's going to be one you're going to have to really watch yourself on.
Right. Just
don't drink and drive.
Well, you know what? There's only one thing that'll go better with a nice, super hopped up beer like this, and out by the pool or at Claire's Picnic, and you, is to bring a little culture back into our lives. I think it's time for some beer haiku.
Cue the music.
Big Foamy Head Interpretive Dance Theater now presents Beer Haiku from BeerHaikuDaily.com. A few pints later, stories and tales grew stranger, and strangers were friends. Written by Captain Hops. Beer Haiku.
Beer Haiku. Class. Culture. Very good.
Golf clap.
Lovely. All right. Very nice. And it was amazing how good your voice quality picked up when you were doing the haiku. It was almost like you were here.
Pre-recorded.
You think?
Yeah.
It wasn't like you were chewing on Doritos or anything.
And of course, we appreciate and happy birthday to Captain Hops and Beer Haiku for also being the same age as us.
Here.
2 years.
What do you say? Prost?
Yep, Prost. All right. Prost. And so we're knocking out the rest of the... Hercules, God, it's starting to work already.
Okay, while we're still in the class and culture segment of Big Foamy Head, I'm going to do another obscure movie reference. It kind of follows The Great Divide. It's a movie called Continental Divide. It came out in 1981, starring John Belushi and
Dan
Aykroyd. Brown.
Yeah. Wasn't Dan Aykroyd in that? Oh, no. Okay. That was the one he wasn't in with. John Belushi. Yeah, John Belushi tries a serious role, sort of. Yeah.
Well, he has a romantic comedy.
Right.
Good stuff. I saw Blair Brown recently. She's not looking so hot, but she's looking pretty good when she's doing today's fights of Molly Brown.
But that was like 30 years ago?
I'm old. I'm not a young man. Neither are you, Dick.
That's when you were 7 years old.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was 30 years ago.
Oh, man. It was a while. Okay, man. All right, I drank the rest of the Hercules. Very good stuff.
That is good.
We need to take another musical break. And,
only good for one more bomber. So.
Okay. Well, we've got one more coming up, a good one, and an interview with our friend from Pacific Brew News. So this is a nice... sweet romantic ballad from the Butthole Surfers. I hate my job.
Hey, this are fucking Mark fucking B and John fucking O'Rourke, and I can't say their full goddamn names because the fucking corporate shit are going to sue my ass. I'm tired, I'm frustrated, I'm full of shit, and I hate my fucking job. Well, welcome to the world, most everything. I hate it. Wow. Walking to the work and they're fucking sitting and I don't give a goddamn about a fucking dick. They're fucking me. They're fucking there. I'm gonna shoot my boss. God damn. Hey, what's up? Hey, what's up? I hate it. I hate the fuck out of it. How about you? I don't know what the things they say or what. Da 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 da, I never have no fun. I wanna shoot my boss with a machine gun. How I do? Hey, my job. Hey, my soul. I hate it. I hate the fuck out of it. How about what?
The Butthole Surfers with their epic I Hate My Job. And I played that because, you know, there's a song, well, the Butthole Surfers are known, best known for their song Pepper, which I relate to, being a pepper.
I'm a pepper, you're a pepper,
too. No, in our family, it's I'm a pepper, you're not. But that's like one of their only, really their only commercial, large commercial success. But these guys have been around for a long time. They're still like they embrace the whole punk new wave thing, of which some of us were around when it first happened. And so I like that. And so I thought Rick would get a kick out of that. Although none of us hate our job. We all love our jobs. We're very fortunate in that. And so anyway.
Thankful.
That's right. Blessed be our jobs.
But you feel like somebody just slapped you upside the head, huh?
So Mike and Claire have not waited. They are jumping right into our next beer. And this is one where we have, and this is interesting, two takes on the same beer. It's the Yeti Imperial Stout made by Great Divide. And, you know, everything we've had up to now has been hoppy, 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 and now we're going stout. Not only stout, we're going Imperial Stout. Rick is having the Yeti Imperial Stout while we are enjoying the oak-aged Imperial Stout.
I'm having oak-aged also.
You got both?
You want me to have the regular?
You have whatever you like. I tell you the difference, and this is what I know.
Maybe I should compare.
You should probably have all of the above, just to make sure. But this is what I learned about the Yeti Imperial Stout, and the difference is the oak age is they do some oak aging to it. Now, I thought at first this was they put it in casks and let it age for a while. Well, the oak-aged Yeti is aged, but instead of a cask, it's described as a mummy-looking object lowered into the Yeti. They take oak chips, French oak chips, drop it down in there. There may be some cask aging. Rick's going to find out when he gets out there. So this is the oak-aged Yeti, which is supposed to give a little roastier vanilla.
Yeah, look how
flavor.
Brown.
And look at, yeah, this is one of those inky black, light brown, tan to brown, almost brown head. Clings, foam clings to the glass. Nice pudding head. Looks like a Coke float looking straight
this
down.
This is my most favorite beer I've had since I've been doing this show.
Really? Well, there you go. That's high praise, isn't it? Because we've had a lot of good beers.
I promise. This is really, really good. I love it.
And this is a an Imperial Stout. And first reactions. What are the tastes that you get out of this? What are you tasting? Just go nuts with it. Claire's just stuck.
Her mind is spinning.
She's stupefied by
after
the,
all those hops.
The beer.
But
I'm
what it, what it is
now.
After all those hops, and then you hit this. It's just
this is like
it's
to
a
me,
180, man.
I got roasts, a lot of roast, malt,
yeah.
Chocolate, toffee, caramel, the little burned, not bad burned, but like kind of cooked. The roast. It's the
roast.
Yeah,
the roast. The roasted flavor,
and,
yeah.
Smoke.
I'm picking up vanilla bean, big time.
Now, and vanilla. Yeah.
Are you getting vanilla?
Where's the Yeti location?
Yes,
the Yeti?
Okay.
You know, that's a good question. They don't actually say anything in the marketing speak.
This coming from where the Yeti lives.
The Yeti's in the Himalayas.
Yes.
And they got a picture of the great big mountain, but they must have some of those Colorado Yetis.
I guess I burned out my vanilla bean taste bud after eating so many pounds of vanilla ice, Breyers. Vanilla bean ice cream.
You're oblivious.
I don't get the vanilla bean.
No, I got it. It's like a roasty vanilla, though. It's a smoke and roast, and man, it's good. But you know what? You know what I'm not getting a lot of is alcohol.
Yeah,
there's not a lot of those diacetyls, the alcohol esters. This is a 9.5, which is kind of on the low side of Imperial Stouts. You can get Imperial Stouts with like 14% alcohol. So. The numbers on it, 9.5%. And here's the interesting thing, the bitterness on this. That first one we had, all right, the Hercules we had was 85%. The Denver was 65%. This is right in the middle,
75%.
But the last thing you're thinking when you drink this is it's a hoppy beer.
Yeah.
It doesn't.
No.
It's not a hoppy flavor.
No, you just add the hops for balance. It's actually more of a sweet beer.
Right. If we didn't have the hops, it'd probably be cloying way too much malt and stuff, which is why you jack up the malt to get the alcohol. Rate Beer gives it a paltry 100. 4.17 average out of 849 beers. Beer Advocate gives it a 91, 4.3 average of 449 reviews. And now again, you got to look at this. You got to look at the numbers. Beer Advocate 4.3 average is higher than Beer Advocate 4.17.
Mm-hmm.
Yet Rate Beer, because he uses the overall impression. 100.
And that means, like I said, the overall, this is the best beer that I have tasted. I'm not kidding.
And so you that's what the whole point of the overall is, the whole beer experience, the taste, the aroma, everything, all combined, and just your general impression of it. And it's a very,
man, I love it,
very nice, tasty beverage. And it's completely different.
Right.
From
let me compare and contrast the Yeti to the aged Yeti.
Okay.
Looks like motor oil.
Yeti itself has a kind of a darker tan head, and right. None of the it's more of the Imperial Stout, the rich, the syrupy, almost maple flavors coming through, whereas the oak aged Yeti, the head is lighter, fluffier. And you get a lot more vanilla characteristic out of it.
Okay.
You know, we got to get Steve to get this beer out here in Memphis.
Yeah, we need to get any of the Great Divides.
Yeah.
No, don't you feel that you would want to just, like, swim in this? It is so...
Amen, sister.
It is so
amen.
Rich and...
A pool full of Yeti.
Yes, why not? I would like that.
Because Claire's telling us offline about the name for our town that I didn't know about, and since we're all celebrities out here, what Claire refers to, where does she live? She lives in Collywood.
I love it.
With the Stepford wives.
Yeah, Stepford wives.
Yeah. So that's what we have out here, pools of Yeti in our backyards.
We got a lake of Yeti. You live on a lake of
that's
Yeti.
Right, a lake of Yeti. Man, this is definitely a finisher beer.
It's like Willy Wonka in a chocolate factory for adults.
Yeah,
oh man.
It's
yeah.
good.
Pool
it's,
of
it's,
Yeti.
It's it.
What's your overall impression of this beer when we talk about ratings overall, Rick?
Well, I love Imperial Stouts. That's one of my favorite categories.
Yeah, I got to agree, too.
These line up perfectly with what I expect from the category. And the Oak Aged is pretty much what I expect from that. I'd like a little bourbon in it.
Oh, man, now you're talking. Of course, we like that. And I would love to see. That would be a challenge for you to issue to Brian when you got to visit him.
Yeah, do a bourbon barrel.
Breakfast stout. A Kentucky breakfast stout.
Man.
And you know, I bet you I'll take you up on it, because this is the thing that impresses me about them as a brewer, the diversity of the line.
I'm not sure that Three Floyds hasn't copyrighted the breakfast stout name, though.
Yeah, well.
Might be a style.
We'll call it something else.
We'll call it Collywood style.
There you go. But the Great Divides produced a bunch of good beers. With a bunch of different styles. And this is what I want to find out from them. And I was trying to read between the lines. They reference different yeast strains. A lot of brewers will produce different beers, use the same yeast. I believe, and you can find this out, Rick, when you interview them, do they use multiple yeasts as well? These seem like very well-crafted, well-thought-out beers. And great. I mean, the least one was still a great beer. The DPA.
Oh, yeah.
I'll guarantee Hades is a unique strain.
Yeah, then it says on there about a Belgian style of yeast. And,
yeah, Hades is not a house yeast at all. So.
Yeah, it's very good beers. And so we've got another. We've been talking earlier on the show about how you rate a beer. We've got some beer forms that I'm going to stick this on the website. This is kind of a nice little checklist that I brought to use. We didn't get around to using it this time, but it's got a lot of good vocabulary to help you describe a beer, and I'm going to post this on the website. So if you want a copy, go and look on where you got the show from. There'll be a link to that. And you know, you always use your own guide. But let's take a few minutes and listen to our friend Rick Sellers from Pacific Brew News and talk some more about how you judge a beer.
Well, to begin, let me step back a bit about the subjective nature of judging. If you're looking at a commercial craft beer, there's two ways you can look at it. You can call it a good beer or a bad beer, which is entirely subjective. And you can look at the beer as to style and not to style, which is much less subjective. And I am a BJCP certified judge, and I judge about 10 commercial competitions a year. And it's all based on style guidelines. And this could be a whole discussion in itself, but what the BJCP has tried to do, and the American Brewers Association to a certain degree, is take a lot of that subjectivity away, so you can look at the beer, and regardless on if you like the style or don't like the style, you can tell the brewer if they've met the style guidelines or how they can improve their beer to fall more in line with the expected style guideline. So, while it's subjective, and in a lot of competitions, there's a best of show round. Best of show is almost always entirely subjective, because by the time it gets to the best of show round, it's already proven itself to be a two-style beer. So at that point, the pen and paper goes away, and it becomes a discussion on which one they think is the best beer. So again, that's just two ways that looking at that subjectivity issue. And I know that right now there's a little bit of resistance to styles. I think Peter Brokart at New Belgium, he's kind of anti-style.
Yep, and Tommy at Pizza Port. Yeah, there is. I've noticed that too, and I think Jolly Pumpkin and a lot of these guys are saying, let's do a beer that we don't want to pigeonhole.
There's a major problem I have with that, and it's from a consumer standpoint. If you're a brewer and you want to make a beer, and I'm a home brewer and I don't use recipes, I just make stuff up, what I think is going to be a good beer. And that's fine. And I applaud the artisan beers that are out there. But when it comes to marketing and when it comes to me buying a beer, the styles really help me identify what beer I'm going to be using for, like, say, a dinner or a party. Yesterday I went to a 4th of July party, and, you know, I wanted to buy light beers. So, you know, I can use the labels, the styles, to tell me what's going to be, what I expect to be a light beer.
Yeah, Rick.
If you take the styles away, you really hamper the consumer's ability to buy a good beer. And if you look at cheese, my main argument is always going back to cheese. You don't have a cheese maker who makes a medium firm orange cheese that finishes sharp and call it a brie. It just doesn't work that way. And so the resistance that brewers in America have against styles, I think, really limits their ability to appeal to the consumers.
Yeah, Rick, I was reading on a homebrew club website just a short while ago. They were talking about what does a judge look for in contests and things like that, and that's what they were talking about was the styles. And they said that when you brew a beer, what you want to do is really, even though you might have been looking for a stout, you might have a porter or vice versa, and you really need to taste what you have to enter it into that category so you can compete, because these judges are going to be judging on style. And I agree with you on your argument on getting away from styles, because when I go to a store and I buy a porter, I want it to be a porter.
Yeah, you want to have a good idea of what you're putting in your shopping cart, because like you said, if you're buying it for people. But I would suggest, on the other hand, I let's look at the difference between a photograph, a portrait, and abstract art.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Abstract art isn't for everybody.
Right.
Right.
But to some people, depending on what it is, it can speak to you. So that's where I see some of these artisan beers and experiments and stuff. I like finding some of those. Some of them I've had are just crazy, you know, and good.
Yeah.
But it's not something you want to go, okay, well, I'm having a party. Let's buy a bunch of this weird abstract beer. Who knows? It might be good.
Well, I sample about 550 beers a year, so I'm going to get to those beers. If it's if it's generic, you know, white and black label that just says beer on it, I'm going to get to that beer. So,
Rick, have you tried any of those Dogfish Heads that we were talking
only
about?
Only the ones that we get out here. Chicory Stout, the 1690 and the 120 Minute, and Worldwide Stout.
Mm-hmm.
Now, 120 Minute, that's a good one about what you were talking about earlier, Mike, about being careful what you call. Off the top of your head, what would you call 120 Minute?
A barley wine.
I would have said the same thing, because barley wines to me is kind of like the extreme catch-all category.
Yeah.
But I can show you on one of the larger beer websites, you tell me why it has been classified as an American double IPA.
Well, yeah, it's going to really get me into a whole other issue that I have complaints about styles. And the fact is, we just don't have enough style guides, you know, to catch everything. And the 120 minute IPA is, it truly is a hop monster.
Yeah.
But with that sugary sweetness, the cloyingly sweet beginning and aftertaste, it's
yeah.
really hard to sell that as a double IPA.
And I would agree with you on that. And that kind of brings me to what we've been talking about in terms of websites. Websites, and I applaud them for all the things they do to present beer, give people a forum, et cetera, but it's subjective. Not just to one person's, but to 800 people's opinions or whatever, right? And if it says, and you can't always go by the styles, more than once I've been tripped up by saying, oh, this is a such and such because it said so on the beer site, and I was using it simply as reference material, but in the brewers themselves are saying it's a different style. So styles, you know, all good points. They're, I think, especially with some of the beers now, it's you can get out of line of a style. What one man's double IPA may be another guy's barley wine, right?
Yeah, one man's trash, another man's treasure.
And,
it's, you know, one site in particular, I think it's probably the most popular beer judging site is ratebeer.com. And I have a profile there, and I enjoy the forums, and I get a lot of information from their website. But by and large, it's not helpful in really truly gauging the quality of the beer with regard to style. If it's a 4 or anything above that, you can generally tell it's going to be a good beer.
Yeah.
But beyond that, sites like that are great at promoting breweries I've never heard of. A lot of times when I'm preparing for one of our shows or writing something, I'll search for a beer, and one of the top results is always ratebeer.com because they have the people base that can really contribute the good information that I want to have, like where is the brewery located, what do they produce, how long have they been open, what's the website, all that kind of stuff. Ratebeer, Beer Advocate, and some of the other sites like that are great resources for learning the basics, but very few of the members are actually...
well, they're not all judges.
I think it's based on what they like.
That's where you leave...
It's subjective.
Exactly. And that's what I was going to say, that you know, you're looking at it with a more... with a judgmental eye, because you've got a background and a training. So,
well, let's keep looking at the rate beer idea. If you go and look at any given beer, you're going to have a very big range. You'll have they have a scale of 0 to 5.
Mm-hmm.
You can get a 1 to a 4.8 on the same beer. And when you're judging a beer for competition under a BJCP sanctioned event, you're not allowed to be more than 7 points out of 50 apart.
Oh.
And most of the time, judges are within, you know, 3 or 4 points.
Okay, well, that's a good background. Didn't know that. Because this is one of the things I was looking at, and this is where I refer back to your article you wrote. You got on here, basically, and you're not, on this article, and it's good, I encourage people to go and read this. It's very
oriented towards a layman. You're not teaching somebody how to be a BJCP judge. You're saying,
right.
pour it in, aroma, smell it. What do you smell? Appearance, how does it look? And understand the taste. And that's where you're getting into bitterness, balance, sweet, spicy. Mm-hmm. What's your overall impression? The thing that I've noticed about your article and Rate Beer and Beer Advocate is you're all saying almost exactly the same thing. It's just the interpretation of it. So I printed this out, and I brought some of these things back, and I looked at how they did the judging. And I don't know if you've ever looked under the covers at how they figured this out. Okay. We were just talking about this a minute ago. Okay, this is a beer, and unfortunately I forgot which site I pulled this off of. I want to say Beer Advocate and Rate Beer use the exact same criteria: aroma, appearance, flavor, palate, and overall score.
Right.
And now one of them refers to palate as mouthfeel, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But where they differ is in, and okay, this is I want to say this is Rate Beer. Aroma is judged on a scale of 1 to 10. Appearance, 1 to 5. Flavor, 1 to 10. Palate, 1 to 5. And overall, 1 to 20. So you do your ranking. There's not a weighting here. They use a Bayesian score, and this is where all my statistics class I took came back to haunt me. And I looked at why in the world is some beers are 100 and other beers are 68s.
But they're pretty good beer.
But they're good beers, but they're close in scores, too. And it has to do with the way they do this, and that's why they don't judge if you've got less than 10. Now, if you flip over to Beer Advocate, theirs are a little different. They have the same five categories, but you rank them from 1 to 5, period. And each one is given a weighting. So aroma weighs less than flavor. Flavor counts more. It's like 10%, 20%, 40%, etc. So it adds up to 100%. So two different ways taking the exact same criteria, whereas you don't have any math at all. You're just saying, here's a way for you just to appreciate it, right?
Hey, Rick, I got a question on this aroma. How are they judging that? The strength of the aroma, or the type of aroma, or the pleasantness of the aroma? What are they looking for?
From a BJCP standpoint, you consider all of what you just mentioned. If you are, take for instance the styles Pilsner and American IPA. You're going to have a lot of the same descriptors in there. It's a hoppy beer. It's going to be a little bit bready up front. It's going to finish clean. There's going to be a slightly moderate lingering bitterness for both styles. But where the aroma really differs is the intensity of the aroma. And so you expect a lot more hop aroma in the American IPA than you would in a Pilsner.
Mm-hmm.
It's there, but if you have an IPA that smells like a Pilsner, from a judging and from a personal preference, it's going to be slightly disappointing.
Because it doesn't fit the style, right?
Yeah.
That.
Yeah.
Aroma is a really big thing, and the one thing I wanted to mention about doing the work of beer judging is it requires a lot of patience, and the American beer market hasn't really learned how to be patient with beers yet. So the aroma and the appearance. We usually spend several minutes, describing what the aroma is, because the aroma tells you more about the beer than the taste. It's just a fact. We've only got four or five, depending on where you look, taste buds.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But we have thousands of,
the olfactories.
Factories, yes. So the aroma is actually, to me, the most important. And when you look at the BJCP sheets that we fill out for homebrew competitions, those are also weighted.
Yeah.
Hey, Rick?
From just a personal perspective, it's going to be good or it's not going to be good.
Hey, I was kind of curious on the aroma and the appearance. Do you close your eyes before you look at the beer and then smell it?
No.
Or do you look at it and then smell it?
I look at it first.
Because, I mean, sometimes the eyes and the nose, they tend to go together. And
yeah. So, like, if you see a dark
world,
beer,
I can see that happening. Yeah. But, you know, another indicator of quality in brewing is head retention. And so if you have a quickly dissipating head, you can't really have your eyes closed.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, and Mike has recently brewed his first beer. So he's been reading up on hops, and we were having this discussion, and this is what kind of prompted this show was we were talking about just all the characteristics that go into a beer, and until you start really learning about it, you have no idea how much there is and how wildly the exact same beer can vary depending on when you add your hops, the dry hopping to get the aroma, the whole, you know, the whole nine yards. And so it's one of those things that, you know, we're doing this kind of as an exercise to look at the beers that we're enjoying. Now, we've done 2 years worth of beers, enjoyed them immensely, but never, ever seriously looked at them and tried to even rate them. It's just, we really, really like it. We compare it based on our memories of other beers. But we never really looked at it to kind of score it. We just kind of took these things. And we kind of use the last show or two, we invoke great beer on everything. We were talking about, I mean, just anything. Oh, yeah, we looked it up on Rate Beer. You know, we're just goofing around with it. So I appreciate all these websites bringing all this. I think it's a good door opener for a lot of people and giving you a lot of insight. And, you know, no matter where you are, an amateur or a BJCP judge, there's something there for everybody and pick a little something out of it. But at the end of the day, you got to use your own opinion and your own knowledge, and you can never go wrong learning more.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, we're all kind of geeky about our beer, and you don't have to do that, obviously, to enjoy a good beer. And I think most people's palates are pretty tuned in. If they've had more than a few different beers, they're going to have a pretty good idea, even if they don't know why they like it. You know, the one thing we have to tell new judges all the time is trust your palate. You know, you can usually score, put a numerical score for the beer first, and make the numbers add up, because you know almost instantly how good the beer is. It's going to take you several minutes to write down all the details, but if people just trusted their palates more, stopped relying on what other people thought about it, I think you'd find that as a consumer, you have much more knowledge than you think you do. So,
well, this is where, you know, tasting and making beer available to people to try, that's what's going to continue to grow craft beer and appreciation of a good beer. I think if anybody smell a warm Budweiser, that'll...
flat warm Budweiser.
There you go.
I appreciate what podcasting allows people to do, too. What you guys and Craft Beer Radio and, you know, James Spencer do a certain degree, what's not found in beer review websites, when you're reading about a beer, you don't capture any of the enthusiasm the person has when they were writing it.
Yeah.
And we were able to hear how you experience the beer the first time, whether it's just a wonderful, like, type sound effect, or whether you're just excited about the beer in general, that actually says a lot more than the words you write down. So I love hearing beer reviews. I think what you guys do and other beer podcasts do is it's way more contagious than reading about a beer.
Well, we appreciate it. I mean, I think we are probably some of the least sophisticated in terms of judging, but we are definitely enthusiastic about our beers. Amen. You know?
And you have good palate.
Amen.
You know what's good.
We do. We like to think we do. And the thing is, you know, there's a mixture of us here, and some of us like the hops, and some of us like the malts, and that's what it's all about. Well,
yep.
Rick, man, I appreciate you taking the time to educate us a little more, and I hope we can catch back up with you. I don't think the discussion's going to end on this show.
No, not by any means, I don't think.
And we'll see if we can find some
dialogue with your listeners. I hope people can email in and really begins to, like, even on your message board you have on your website. You know, those are great forums to really learn more if you have questions.
And yeah, absolutely.
Great listeners that are loyal and post to your site, so... It's a great, I think it should be part of our national conversation, to be quite honest, you know, to, and not just about beer, but so many things, whether it's craft colas or artisan cheeses, those kind of things.
Yep.
You know?
And I think we're starting to see we're starting to see some of that. We've been talking about food pairings, and I know that Phil over at Dude Night is doing a second podcast about beer and food. So, yeah, good call on that. All right, well, Rick, we'll let you run, and thanks for giving us some time.
Hey, anytime.
All right. Enjoyed it, Rick. Thanks.
Thanks, guys.
So always good hearing from Rick Sellers, and he represents
Pacific Brew News.
Pacific Brew News.
And he was recently featured in Draft Magazine.
That's right.
So you could see his writing skills. He's got quite the blog also.
Yeah, he does. He writes quite a bit. He's very well informed, and he represents, in my mind, he's a judge. You know, so he's going to be a little more critical and have a keener eye towards these things. I think he's going to see things that a lot of us miss, but it's always good to learn a little more, hear a little bit more about it. Some great articles on there, and I think is what I was I mentioned earlier in the interview. His article on judging a beer is actually a lot less judgmental than most. He kind of combines some of the elements, and basically he's giving you a direction to appreciate a beer. Nice, short little read. I encourage everybody to go visit his site.
PacificBrewNews.com?
Yep.
Is that correct?
He definitely has a left coast hop-oriented orientation, though.
Yeah, well, you know,
like
that's
big hops.
That's and who doesn't like a big hop, right? Although this
But one thing I liked about him...
We do, but not all the time.
One thing I liked about him, he said that he likes the style. He likes to keep beers in their style. And that's something I really like because... When you're sitting there buying a beer and you're buying a pale ale, by God, when you get it home, it needs to taste like a pale ale.
Yeah, it helps if you're buying something that you think you got a preconceived idea you want to kind of fit in there. But then again, if you don't know what you're buying,
New Belgium is totally anti-style.
Well, and I like that too, and that's where my analogy.
Creates his art, and you accept his art.
Exactly, right. and that goes to my analogy about is it abstract or is it a photograph?
But you know, when you're in that category, you're in that category. Yeah. I mean, that's it. But if you want
a guide, you should be able to rely on what's on the box. If you want to be adventurous, that's when it's good to try some of these out-of-the-box beers, artisan.
Peter says if you like his beer and you want it to be a winner, create a style around the beer that fits his beer.
Okay. And, from Peter Brookert.
Brookert
from, New Belgium.
It's close enough for government work.
Yeah, and Tommy from Pittsport. They're kind of alike minds, and we talked about that in the interview. This is there's styles and there's any styles and there's something for everybody in there. And, you know, when you're just getting into the beers and you're wanting to learn a little more, styles help. Once you know a little bit about it, that's where you want to start branching out and being able to appreciate it a little more fully. So,
if I buy a Russian Imperial Stout, I want it to taste like Russian Imperial Stout.
Yeah. You kind of got an expectation and then it's met or exceeded or diminished. So like our Yetis.
Don't beat that expectation.
Right. Our Yetis were definitely within what you would consider an Imperial Stout and very well done.
And speaking of Yetis, Rick, can you send me a case of this Yeti Imperial Stout?
I could.
It cost you $1.03. Not an inexpensive.
And we'll accept donations.
That's right. Be sure to give us your credit card number. We'll charge the appropriate amount.
Mm.
So here we got to circle back. It's July 5th, 2-year anniversary. Happy birthday to us. And that's a damn good accomplishment.
Amen.
There's a lot of people falling by the wayside. Show 83
right,
here.
It shows them out.
Show 83. Yeah. Not all of them good. Celebrating 50 good shows. it's pretty good. It's pretty impressive, and I think we're continuing to grow and evolve, and we'll keep going and see where it goes.
Well, the awesome part, Dick, is the fact that we've drank so many good beers, and we've really learned so much about the craft beer industry. Despite what our listeners gain, you know, hopefully they're entertained, because I find our shows very entertaining. but the personal growth is just amazing.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, 2 years ago, we both liked a good beer and knew a little bit about it, but it's definitely been...
Oh, we said so many stupid things.
Yeah, it's been a growth and a learning adventure, and, you know, as they say, the wise man is somebody who knows how little he knows.
Hey, Rick, take a piece of paper out tonight and think about all the people. Write down their names of who you've met and come in contact with during this show over the last 2 years. And I bet you'll fill that paper up 10 times.
Oh, we've talked to so many people.
It's just unbelievable what this has done for me in just a short amount of time. I've been associated with the show, and the number of people I've talked to on the phone or out in public, and it's just truly amazing, the craft beer industry and what's going on with it. And I see it every time I pull a magazine out. I read in like a kitchen magazine or a chef magazine or something like that. They're talking about beer pairings with food and things like that. And the craft beer industry is just really starting to, I think it's really kicking butt right now.
Yeah, it really is
really going for growth.
A revival. It happened in the early 80s, and now I think it's starting to take off. People are looking for something a little better, and we'll do our little part to spread the word.
Amen.
And Rick, you were telling me off air about something I mentioned for the 4th of July. Oddly enough, we celebrated it sort of the same way. We both went to...
Right, we had similar celebrations.
We went to the baseball park, and I went to the Redbirds here, and you went to, what was it, the Denver what?
Rockies.
The Denver Rockies.
And let's go ahead and clarify that the Redbirds are the AAA team for the...
St. Louis Cardinals. Yep. And
it's not a slouch team. It's actually quite a beautiful stadium.
That's right. It's a fantastic stadium. And
you realize they spent $70 million on that stadium?
I believe it. It's a beautiful stadium. Yeah. Very well done. And I was posted on the confrontation board today over at the Beer Report about how...
I saw that you're hanging out there.
Yeah. I was delighted to see the selection of beer at the ballpark. It wasn't just the big beers. They had a lot of interesting beers there. So we had a good time. We sat on this nice little bluff and watched it. You could spread the blanket out. And this is where, you know, Albert Pujols, who was, an MVP last year, and I watched him in the World Series just dominate.
Yeah.
Where do you think he's from? Right here.
Started right here.
Mm-hmm. So good time and a big fireworks show at the end. You, Rick, went to Denver, and basically the exact same
Colorado
thing.
Colorado Rockies, and they're playing the Mets, and they had already swept the Yankees like a couple of weeks earlier. So the Rockies have got kind of a tradition with the New York teams of kicking their ass. But last night's game was 17-7, and it was just an ass whooping like you wouldn't believe.
But the
the good thing for a beer connoisseur is that Coors has what they call a sandlot, and it's a pilot brewery, a microbrewery, something, within the stadium, Coors Field. So I went in, and, they had several nondescript taps, and I was like, well, what's this? They had a red, and then they had a smoked lager, like a Rausch beer. They didn't call it a Rausch beer, but the thing was exceptional. The Coors smoked lager just blew me away. It was one of the best I've ever had.
And you were writing that, and I wrote back to you. I said, you rarely ever hear the words really good beer and Coors in the same sentence. So there's some hope there, huh?
I was telling the guy I was with that I'm not going to spend $6 for a bad beer.
No.
And he said, well, let's go to the Sandlot. And we went, and I was very pleasantly surprised. I mean, I couldn't be happier with the beer I had last night. So,
well, you know, we've talked about the monster of St. Louis, AB, and their efforts, and it seems like even the big guys are trying harder these days.
They're delving into the craft.
They are doing their best. They got to get over that big beer mentality and make something really good and not look so much at profits. Yeah. Profits will come with sales.
Anheuser-Busch has a experimental brewery out here in Fort Collins.
Yeah.
And then obviously Coors, which is in Golden. I drive past Golden every day on my way to work. Coors Coors has their Sandlot, so they're experimenting also. I think if they could get a commercially viable craft beer, they would sell it.
Well, hadn't Busch gone to that Wild Hop?
Yeah, beer? Anheuser, but can you buy it? That's a facade though. Yeah. They had something good. They could put it on. Yeah, see, that's what they're trying to pass as craft beer.
Uh-huh.
The Wild Hop and the Stonebridge and stuff. And now, put your name on it. Mm-hmm. If it's good enough, you will put your name on it. People will try and like it. But anyway, that's a fodder for another show. Gateway Beers, how do you get from here to there? More looking into learning about a beer and just all kinds of things as we get into year three. How are things going and what else are we going to do? And I guess we ought to wrap it up. And we're going to lead out with a little Brian Setzer number, Broken Down Piece of Junk. And this is from his pretty new record, 13 songs. And pretty interesting cut. And just going to lead out with that, Broken Down Piece of Junk. See you next time.
Come back soon.
Yeah. Drive safe.